The next case on the docket is Louise Terry versus the Ottawa County Board of Mental Retardation and Developmental Delay. Representing Ottawa County Board, the appellants, Mr. Thomas Antononi.
Good morning, and may it please the court, I'd like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal. What the Court of Appeals ruled below in this case is clear. It's wrong, but it's clear. The court below ruled that even in the absence of specific causation testimony from an expert, that air sampling results and the appellee's own testimony alone is sufficient to allow a jury to infer specific causation and consequently to survive summary judgment. That is an expansion of Ohio law that we would urge this court to resist by confirming that in these types of cases, lab results and the appellee's own testimony that they were exposed to a certain substance are not a substitute for expert testimony as to specific causation. Not a single case was cited by either the Court of Appeals below or the appellees for that proposition that you can substitute specific causation testimony from an expert with lab results and the appellee's own testimony. This same Court of Appeals below, notably just months later after the Terry decision, affirmed summary judgment in a mold case precisely because the plaintiffs in that case, and this is the Bogner decision, offered no expert testimony as to causation, relying instead merely on a health department report confirming the existence of mold and their own testimony that they had suffered medical symptoms and that they were exposed to mold. But the ruling below in Terry, that the case that is now before this court, is clear and it has some important implications for mold cases, irritant cases, and potentially for toxic tort cases. The import of the rule is as follows. The court below held that in order for a plaintiff to pursue a substance case, a plaintiff need prove only three items. One, that a particular substance is capable of causing a medical symptom, that's the general causation aspect. Two, that there are lab results showing that that substance was present. And three, testimony from the appellees themselves or the plaintiff themselves that they were exposed to that certain substance. Notably missing from that scheme and that proposed method of proof is any expert testimony that the exposure and the substance did in fact cause the complaint of symptoms. Notably missing is any expert testimony as to specific causation, and that is clearly erroneous, especially in light of this court's recent pronouncement in Valentine. That is not only a departure from well-established law, but it is particularly erroneous in this case because Dr. Bernstein, the appellee's own retained allergist and immunologist, was unable to offer a reliable opinion as to specific causation. And moreover, not a single treating physician who testified in this case offered any opinion as to causation. It is pretty clear, at least in our view, why appellees have now at this stage decided to put Clint Jones's report at the front and center of their case. Clint Jones is the industrial hygienist who analyzed the lab results. The reason, in our view, they're doing that is because the Court of Appeals erroneous decision essentially left them with no choice. Because their specific causation expert, Dr. Bernstein, was struck by both the trial court and the Court of Appeals, they have now had to argue really for the first time that Clint Jones is their specific cause expert, and it's not a good place for them to be left with. A simple review of the Clint Jones report, which is document number 285, reveals that his opinion, now offered as to specific causation, is not reliable for two main but related reasons. First of all, he concludes merely that there is a correlation, not causation, but a correlation between the items he found in the building and the complained of symptoms. Second, his only comment in his analysis is that the appellees experienced these symptoms while they were in the building, and those symptoms abated when they left the building. That is precisely the same reason that Dr. Bernstein's testimony as to specific causation was found not reliable. Jones is essentially relying on a temporal relationship between the symptoms and the complaints to support his comment that there is a correlation between the substance and the symptoms.
Mr. Antonelli, is it your view then that testimony would be inadmissible, or is this testimony with respect to general causation something that goes to weight?
I believe
is it a failure of proof that should be taken care of through trial court instruction?
I do not believe that this issue at all involves the burden of proof and whether or not plaintiffs have done enough to sustain their burden of proof. Causation, general causation, is really not at issue in this stage. What's at issue is specific causation. And the trial court and the Court of Appeals, importantly, ruled that Dr. Bernstein does not have a reliable methodology that he used so that he can testify as to specific causation. So what the Court of Appeals has proposed is to let a jury infer that based on the lab results, the general causation, and their own testimony that they were exposed. And again, now to try to fill in the gap, the appellees are now arguing that the industrial hygienist, his comment that there is a correlation, can fill in that gap as to specific causation. Notably, he also did not perform any reliable differential diagnosis and did not even attempt to do that.
I understand your argument, but you're not suggesting any of this testimony is inadmissible.
No, Your Honor. The only testimony that would be inadmissible at this stage would be Dr. Bernstein's proffered testimony as to specific causation.
Okay. So what is the ruling that you want our court to make, given that the testimony, by your statement, is admissible?
The ruling that I would...
What should we do? Should we... What rule of law are you proposing?
The rule of law, I think, in this particular case, there would be two. One would be, I think this court could reverse the Court of Appeals decision merely on the basis of Valentine, which held that expert testimony is required ordinarily to prove general causation, and as to this case, specific causation. There's nothing about this case that takes it out of the, this is not a common situation that laymen should be allowed to infer specific causation. The rule of law that we proposed that was taken in by this court is that expert testimony is required to establish a causal connection between mold and a subsequent injury. I think the Court of Appeals, almost recognizing that gap, then offers the appellees somewhat of an escape clause when they also ruled that, well, the appellees can also go get a reliable and relevant expert once we send it back down. To me,
counsel,
that, yes.
The opening sentence of Judge Scow's opinion: appellants ask us to reverse the decision of the Court of Common Pleas, which granted the appellee's motion to exclude the appellant's expert witness opinion that mold growth in the appellee's building caused the appellant's injuries. Appellants also ask us to reverse the trial court's grant of summary judgment to the appellees as to all the appellant's claims. After a thorough review, we must conclude that the trial court erred in barring the appellant's expert witness testimony, and that grant of summary judgment to the appellees was therefore improper. So they're reversing on the basis that evidence as to mold growth in the appellee's building caused the appellant's injury was error.
But what they did, and this was confounding to me, is they ruled that Dr. Bernstein should have been allowed to testify as to general causation. He did enough in his analysis. He used a reliable methodology that he should have been allowed to testify, and that there was evidence as to general causation. That is, mold can cause and can be associated with certain symptoms. But the Court of Appeals then went on to rule that the trial court correctly struck Dr. Bernstein's testimony as to specific causation because he did not do a reliable differential diagnosis. He did not rule out other potential causes for the symptoms they were complaining about. So in essence, they give Appley's general causation, they take away the specific causation, but then in the end they come back to saying, well, we still think there's enough because you have the appellee's own testimony that they were exposed to this mold.
Is it true that exposure to mold can cause physical harm to individuals?
That is a difficult question to answer, in part because, as I have learned in the reading I've been doing, there's over 100,000 types of mold. I think the state of the science to date I can represent fairly is that mold and irritants are and can be associated with certain maladies. But okay. there are certainly no thresholds to suggest when it specifically will in a particular individual.
But it would also be your view that it can never be shown that this mold versus mold exposure somewhere else is the cause of the physical problem?
No, Your Honor.
Science just isn't there.
No, Your Honor. I think the deficiency in this particular case was that the Dr. Bernstein, the appellee's only proffered expert as to specific causation, did not make any type of analysis like that. He did not do a reliable differential diagnosis. He did not even attempt to rule out those other types of causes. He kind of talked about what he might need to do. He mentioned that in some cases it's cost prohibitive, but in the end he relied basically on the temporal relationship. We are not saying that it's impossible.
Does this come down to a dispute as to what the claimant, the plaintiff, needs to prove to get to a jury versus some of the stuff that you're talking about would seem to me to be, that's the defendant's job to show, well, this coughing, this whatever, the difficulty that the person is encountering, could have been any number of sources. In other words, if the plaintiffs can show that a mold that can cause damage to human beings was present in the workplace, and that these human beings got the very kind of diseases or problems, physical problems, that would be associated with that exposure, is it then the plaintiff's burden to also rule out all of the other exposures in that person's life that could cause that same or could lead to the same physical difficulties?
Our position is this, that it is about whether or not a plaintiff can get to a jury, and that's the danger.
But is it the plaintiff's obligation to rule out all other possible causes?
I think the plaintiff's obligation is to offer expert testimony as to specific causation. One way of doing that, it's accepted, is through differential diagnosis. And that doesn't necessarily mean ruling out every other cause, but in each case is different. But to do a reliable differential diagnosis using a reliable methodology, you ought to make some effort to rule out other known causes. And that's what was not done in this case. Dr. Bernstein, both the trial court and the Court of Appeals, ruled that he was unable. He did not use a reliable methodology such that he can say that the mold caused it.
Wouldn't that be where the Valentine case differs? I mean, Justice Moyer argued that there's just no proof that the exposure to these chemicals can cause anything. I argued that mathematically, because there were two that changed the dynamics of it. But here you're dealing with, I believe, symptoms that in fact can be caused by mold, and you're arguing, but they can be caused by other things as well.
Correct.
And that would be different than Valentine.
And I think Valentine ultimately came down on the issue of general causation. Mm-hmm. Here we're talking about specific causation. The plaintiff's, the appellee's own experts could not offer specific causation. My position is this court should not allow a jury to infer specific causation based merely on lab results and the appellee's own testimony. There are just too many unknown variables to let it go to a jury on that basis alone.
Mr. Antonini, would this be the first case that we would really be talking about the distinction between general and specific causation? I noticed Valentine, we talked only about general causation, and the Court of Appeals here was referring to the appellate decision, since we hadn't yet ruled on Valentine. But would you just talk about that a little bit?
I believe that from this court, the Court of Appeals below in Valentine spent more time in analysis of the specific versus general causation issue. I believe the ruling of Valentine from this court is still that expert testimony is ordinarily needed to prove both general causation and specific causation. I believe this would be the first time this court has passed on this issue, whether or not, in the absence of expert testimony as to specific causation, should a jury be allowed to infer specific causation based merely on lab results and the appellee's own testimony that they were exposed to that mold. I believe I've used up most of my time today. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Margaret Murray, on behalf of Louise Terry, the appellees.
Good morning. May it please the court. I represent Louise Terry and 15 other employees that worked in one building at 140 Buckeye Boulevard, Portland, Ohio. We're here today on appeal from Ottawa County. I know the court has a lot of questions, and I'm happy to be interrupted at any time. In this case, the record is huge. We introduced more than a dozen medical doctors who each testified as to the specific symptoms which each plaintiff suffered from. Those doctors include doctors of general practice, pulmonologists, allergy immunologists, eye doctors. We also introduced
those doctors did not make the link between the mold and the injury. They were just testifying as to injury, correct?
Correct, Your Honor.
Okay, so that's not relevant to this issue then.
Well, it is to the extent that the appellees have provided sufficient evidence of general causation through the testimony of Dr. Jonathan Bernstein, a point that appellant does not challenge. In addition to that testimony, the appellees also provided reliable evidence of general and specific causation through the testimony of their hygienic expert, Robert Jones, as well as reliable evidence of specific symptoms sustained by each of these individual appellees through the authenticated medical records going back.
So the lab results basically say this type of mold was present.
Correct.
And you're maintaining that Dr. Bernstein testified that this type of mold causes this type of injuries.
Correct.
And you're saying A plus B can equal C, what the medical doctors testify to as the symptoms.
Well, what I'm saying, Your Honor, is that A plus B is sufficient to overcome summary judgment. Summary judgment is not to be an absolute bar to getting to a jury. What the Court of Appeals in this case didn't say is that the appellees do not need to provide any expert testimony on specific causation to reach the jury. What the Court of Appeals said is that the appellees need to provide additional testimony on specific causation in order not to have the verdict directed against them. The standard of Daubert is different than the standard of summary judgment. In this case, the Court of Appeals was only determining whether Dr. Jonathan Bernstein was improperly excluded in toto and whether the trial court erred after excluding that testimony in toto by throwing out the entire case. That was the sole basis for the trial court's exclusion of this case. He threw out the baby with the bathwater. The Court of Appeals found that in doing so, the appellees sustained clear prejudice, that the summary judgment standard in the state of Ohio does not require that you definitively establish proximate cause in order to survive summary judgment.
So if we get you past summary judgment and let you go to a jury, how do you prove your case if you don't have any testimony linking the two?
I would follow the instruction of the Court of Appeals or this court to introduce the evidence of a specific causation expert on medical
basically
testimony.
Basically get a second bite at the apple by a reversal?
No, it's not a second bite at the apple, Your Honor. There are two issues at stake. One is summary judgment. Summary judgment does not require that I prove the case. Summary judgment only requires that I provide a substantial evidence sufficient enough to establish that there are issues of material fact.
So you're arguing because you're at the summary judgment stage, you still have the ability to introduce new testimony. If this were a trial, you'd be done.
Correct. And that's what the Court of Appeals said as well. And I don't refute that. The important thing that I'm sure that this court is well aware of through numerous Daubert challenges, and Ballantyne being the most recent, is that Daubert is being misapplied routinely by trial courts throughout the state and throughout the country. Daubert is only meant to be a guidepost for trial courts to exclude junk science, to exclude those areas of medicine and science that have not been peer-reviewed or published, that are not widely accepted in the medical and scientific community. Daubert was not generated in Miller in Ohio in order to exclude valid cases. It's only to make sure that improper evidence doesn't make it to the jury. In this case, that's exactly what the Court of Appeals did. He looked at it, and it was a unanimous opinion, but written by Judge Scow, and said, clearly he meets the methodology. Clearly, mold causes injuries. Anyone who ever cleaned out the garage and sneezed after getting dust in their nose recognizes that there's an irritant in their nose, and it's not rocket science. It's very straightforward. But what the Court of Appeals found was that in this case, my expert failed to make the link properly. He didn't apply the methodology in a reliable fashion. Now, with respect to that issue, that discrete issue on specific causation for this expert, the Court of Appeals correctly said that can't go forward. But with respect to summary judgment, the same standard doesn't apply. Summary judgment only requires that I provide enough evidence to show that there are material issues of fact still at issue.
So you're not arguing that you should be able to go to trial with the general testimony of causation and the lab reports and win the case. You're saying that's enough to get you past summary, and then you're going to bring in an expert to make that specific. So you're not really arguing that you don't still require specific causation. Do you agree that specific causation is still required?
I do, Your Honor. Yes, the appellees do not refute the proposition of law accepted by this court. We agree with that proposition of law. But what the appellants would like to put forth before this court is that Daubert coupled with summary judgment should be a gotcha situation, that after 7 years of litigation, more than 70 depositions, more than 20 medical professionals who have testified in this case, that now, because one expert was not qualified or didn't reliably apply Daubert to the medical records in this case, that the whole case should be thrown out. And clearly, the Ohio Rules of Civil Procedure do not look for such a result. Clearly, that would be a gross miscarriage of justice.
Counsel, the concern I have is this, the temporal connection. You know, we're talking about the general causation testimony, and you say mold is a problem, and there are symptoms here. You know, the idea that one comes after the other doesn't necessarily mean cause.
Right.
And it seemed to me that, at least the argument on the other side, is there has to be an expert linkage
right.
of the two, which is missing here, and which
correct.
The Court of Appeals seems to say doesn't matter because we can infer. And if they're talking about an inference solely on the temporal connection, it seems that may be flawed.
Respectfully, Your Honor, I'd have to say that the Court of Appeals agrees with you. The Court of Appeals, in fact, struck Dr. Bernstein's specific causation testimony specifically on the fact that the Court of Appeals felt that he only looked at the temporal relationship. And as Daubert and Miller are crystal clear, you cannot rely solely on a temporal relationship. We argued otherwise, the Court of Appeals felt differently. But that issue only goes to whether Dr. Bernstein was correctly excluded in toto, whether part of his testimony was reliable, and also whether the trial court erred in throwing out the entire case based solely on Dr. Bernstein's testimony.
What testimony, what expert testimony did you have, did you present regarding the connection between the mold and the symptoms suffered by these individuals?
Well, Your Honor, in the hygienics report put forth by plaintiffs, appellees in this case, by Robert Jones, he does establish that mold, these molds were present, these bacteria were present, these other irritants were present, and that they are known in the scientific community to cause these types of symptoms. And then he went one step further and said, these are the types of symptoms that are complained of by the appellees in this case, and therefore that was sufficient for the Court of Appeals to get me past summary judgment.
But now, you don't have an expert, though, that says this is the cause of these symptoms.
I have sufficient evidence to get over summary judgment. I do need an expert on specific causation for it to not get directed.
Your position is that you really don't have to prove, you don't have to provide proof to the trial court on the summary judgment level. It's only later when you're in front of a jury that you need this proof.
I don't have to definitively prove proximate cause. I do have evidence of the specific causation. I just don't have that. I am missing a link, and that was highlighted by the Court of Appeals, and I don't refute that. But what's before this court is whether, as the appellants have phrased it, is whether an expert is required to overcome summary judgment or to go to trial. And we don't refute that an expert's required for me to go to trial. I need to correct the record, and I need to do that when it is remanded.
But doesn't Drescher versus Burt beg the expert testimony question? Isn't that what this court set out for summary judgment testing?
Well, Your Honor, respectfully, I do have expert testimony. Drescher v. Burt didn't reach the issues of general and specific causation. I have, you know, more than a dozen medical experts who've testified and are in the record. I have an industrial hygienist who's testified. And as this court said in Schillings v. Mobile Analytical, the testimony of a non-medical doctor is also sufficient. And in that case, this court accepted that opinion as being appropriate and reversed the trial court on summary judgment for that reason.
So what is the, I ask you the same question I asked in the last case, what is the rule of law that you want this court to write here then? How would we write a law that says, what would you have us write, I guess is a better way to say.
Frankly, Your Honor, I was dismayed to see this case accepted for review.
We all made a mistake.
The appellees agree with the proposition of law articulated by appellants. We think that's already what Ohio law says.
Oh, I see.
So to the extent that that's the statement of law, we agree with it.
So really there isn't an issue then between yourself and
no,
Mr. Anson?
The issue that appellants are trying to raise is whether I can add a specific causation expert when it gets remanded to the trial. That's a completely separate issue than the issues that were before the
Court
of
Appeals.
Well,
that's a discovery question that trial judge or someone else will have to resolve. That's really not
right.
Before us.
It's not.
But if I understand your position, you really don't disagree with the proposition of law that's being advanced.
We do not, no. And, you know, it should be noted, Mr. Antonini referenced Clint Jones's report and said, well, you know, it's unreliable. And he raised those same issues before the trial court. When this case was dismissed, the trial court didn't render a ruling on that. Issues that are not ruled upon are deemed overruled. He can't come before this honorable court now and say, oh, it's unreliable, because that's not before this court. The court has to take the record as it is. And he raised those issues in the trial court. It didn't make it to the Court of Appeals. It's not before this court today.
Counsel, what about the industrial hygienist report not being considered or not being offered as causation evidence in the courts below? Would you comment on that? That's an argument
right.
made by the other side.
Right, and I would disagree with Mr. Antonini respectfully on that issue as well. The appellate court properly considered all of the evidence in the record. The report of the hygienist experts were in the record, and as I articulated, they were also challenged on Daubert by Mr. Antonini in the trial court. All of these issues were in the record and are part of the record. And whether he goes to causation was also argued earlier in briefs. I think, and Mr. Antonini can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think we have well over 1,000 filings in this case. The record is just huge. There are many, many things that we have argued, and one of the things that was argued in connection with the filings of summary judgment and Daubert were also on causation in those issues, and we articulated that Clint Jones was our expert for the industrial causation, as was Gary Hutter for Mr. Antonini for his industrial causation. The evidence speaks for itself regardless of the labels that are applied to it. Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Antonini, you've more than used your time, but we'll give you the customary 30 seconds to a minute to respond.
And I'd like to respond. Thank you. I'd like to directly address what I think I'm now hearing Appley say, and it goes to the Drescher v. Burt question, and it goes to whether or not they're entitled to another bite at the apple. And it's kind of tied into their amicus brief suggestion that we now have a new kind of scheme where if any party's expert is struck, they get a chance to cure that. I submit to you that would undo years of law under Rule 56, product liability cases, medical malpractice cases, where discovery is completed, a trial judge sets certain deadlines, there's motion cutoffs, expert discovery cutoffs, the evidence is submitted, and a trial judge determines that there's not enough evidence to create a genuine issue of fact. What the appellees are now proposing is we get a chance to go back, because the only time we really have to cross that bridge is when we're at the trial court with the jury.
Well, counsel, if this is remanded to the trial court, is the trial court precluded from saying, here was the discovery schedule, here were the cutoff deadlines, and the plaintiffs have missed those, and I mean that's housekeeping for the trial court to deal with.
This court could do that by ruling that the Court of Appeals erred by allowing that gap to exist in the record, and also erred by suggesting that appellees can always go back and get another expert. I think that's a dangerous precedent for this court to allow to happen, and to just dismiss that by accepting the argument that this was some type of gamesmanship or a booby trap. I mean, there was nothing unusual about the way this case progressed that's different from the thousands of other cases that are resolved by way of summary judgment, and that could go for either plaintiffs or defendants. If defendants have an expert who's struck under this new proposed rule, they would have another chance to go back and cure it and to fill in that missing link. I think that would be again, a change in Ohio law.
Well, what, again, is to stop the trial court from saying this was the discovery deadline and they're missed, and therefore this is the evidence this is the only evidence that will come before the trial court, and revisit it and give the reason for summary at that point because of a coupling of the lack of the evidence and preclusion of acquiring additional evidence based on not adhering to the discovery schedule.
I think the danger of that would be if it went back to the trial court and the trial court said, that's it, it's back here, but this is all the evidence we're going to have. The evidence at that point then going to the jury would be, again, the general causation. Yeah, we know mold can cause these problems. We have lab results showing some mold, and the appellee's own testimony that they suffered these symptoms, that missing link has never been filled in.
And if it does get to trial and there is the missing link, there's always the directed verdict.
Correct. But again, that would, in my view, undo Rule 56. Rule 56 would completely lose its teeth. And I think that cuts both ways for plaintiffs and defendants and all litigators in Ohio.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The case is submitted. The court will take a brief recess.